Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I think you're the best.
The best.
Are we?
Are we?
It's so hard to tell when nobody's breathing. Holding your chest.
Your chest.
Until we.
Until we.
It's so tired that we forget what we're racing. I know that you're right.
You're right.
Every time.
Every time.
But I fight it cause that's just what I'm like, yeah. I think you're the best.
The best.
Should we?
Should we?
Live at 5 a.m. when everyone's sleeping. And I caught up to your taxi.
And I caught up to you, glad that you were left.
That was our very own James McMorrow, Me and My Friends. Not the toxic ones. That was just a complete coincidence that we played that. Now, a new documentary series, Football Families, premieres on RTE1 this Thursday, July 31st at 10:10 p.m. It offers a behind-the-scenes look at Shelburne FC's remarkable 2024 season, focusing on their younger players. And this isn't just for football fans. It's a powerful look at ambition, resilience and the tight-knit world of Shelburne FC. An important part of that tight-knit world is the Academy programme, aimed at developing and nurturing younger football players. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Colin Barron, the Academy Director at Shelburne Football Club, Aoife Sheridan and Darren Adwale, who feature in the documentary and were part of the Academy programme. You're all very welcome. How are you? How's it going?
All good. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks. I'm delighted you came in. I got to watch episode one.
Very good.
And I just discovered none of you have seen it.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'll give you a few spoilers later. It's really good. It's a great watch. And as I said, like, I don't watch a lot of football, but I was completely sucked in and I can't wait for episode two. So, Colin, why did you agree to take part in a documentary?
I think when we first met with Edel and Marie, the discussion around it was the diversity within the club was a big part of it. You know, to tell stories about the families and the different types of families and the commitment they make to football.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be a documentary or a Netflix series that was about following a team or following the coaches. It was more so about the players.
Yeah.
That for me was a massive element of it. And then obviously to show the work that's being done in the academies, I suppose, the massive amount of volunteers that we have in the club, obviously the dreams and aspirations that players have to go and play at the highest level, and we try to support that as best we possibly can. So that was a huge element to it as well. And then hopefully that maybe some of these players would have cameras in their faces at some stage in their careers, and that would help them. Give them a little helping
hand. A bit of media training. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So what's your role as the Academy Director at Shelburne?
So I oversee the male and the female side, from under 20s down on the boys' side, under 19s down on the women's side. We've obviously got the Women's Academy Manager in Gemma Murphy and the Men's Academy Manager in James Toner, and they work, I suppose, directly underneath me. And then the multiple players, coaches, managers, volunteers and staff that we have as well. I kind of oversee everything.
How did you get into it?
Oh, look, I suppose I started playing the game at a young age. I played with Bohemians. I probably shouldn't say that on the radio, but I played with them.
It's written here, you can say it.
I played with them up until I was 18, 19 years of age. Went into what was the old Force course, got very bad injuries at the time. Stephen Kenny was the manager of the first team. Ended up having to retire from the game at age of 19. And for me then, it was about, how do I get back into sport? I knew that football was my passion. I went and studied in UCD, done a sports management diploma, went on to Carlow IT, studied there, and then got into coaching, worked with St. Kevin's Boys, got involved in doing FAI development programs, and just loved coaching. It was a way to give back into the game, but it was something I was extremely passionate and driven by, and still am.
So I have to mention, Damien Duff gets mentioned quite a lot in episode one. How much of an impact has he had on the club?
Look, Damien, as a player, everybody knows who he is and what he was. You know, an incredible Irish legend and what he did for the game. I think he came into the club at the right time for him, even though he was involved in the underage structure, coaching the under-17s. The team made the transition into full-time football and Damien became the manager. And I suppose, what a person to get it at the right time. Do you know what he was able to do with the level that he'd played at, his understanding of football of the highest level was probably the perfect match, as well as the quirky character, the relationship he struck up with the fans and the club was huge. And then the influence that filters down through the club just with regards to standards and everything. When you have somebody who's played at the top level like that, automatically, I suppose, people sit up a little bit more, and my job becomes more difficult to develop higher level players. That certainly happens.
Yeah.
But look, he was a massive positive influence on the league, not just the club.
Yeah. Aoife, I'm going to go to you. Surprise you there, gave you a little fright. How did you get involved with Shelburne?
I think, you know, I started playing football just from seeing my older brother playing. I would do different academies around Balbriggan, and I started off with Boscaden Boys, and I think I was there for a year just under my dad's team, and it was kind of, okay, well, do you want to join a girls' team?
So you were playing on a boys' team. How's that work out?
Yeah, it was just, I think one day, like, my dad needed a goalkeeper and he just said, like, Aoife, jump in there.
Love your dad.
Yeah. I think I lasted the first half in goals and I said, no, like, I want to go out. I'm not staying in here. So I went outfield and...
baptism of fire. Love
it. Yeah. I've stayed out ever since. So, yeah, it was fun. It was playing with, you know, my brothers and my cousins as well.
Brilliant.
Would be on the team and playing with the boys. You know, it's always good because... you know, you get a good battle out with them all the time, like, so.
I love your language.
Yeah. And then after that, yeah, it was very much like, you know, you want to play for a girls' team? And I was like, yeah, of course. And I think, you know, Shells, I went up, and as soon as I was up there, it was like, yeah, this is where I want to be.
This is the home.
Team I want to be at, like, so, yeah, from the very first training session, I was hooked.
And Darren, you're on transfer to Athlone at the moment, but in the documentary you're under 19s, so we see you in under 19s because it was filmed a little while ago. So how did you get involved with Shells?
So growing up, I kind of started at St. Kevin's Boys, and I had a few managers that had been at the club, including Collie. So I knew, like, a lot of familiar faces there, and at the time I was coming home from Italy, and it was just kind of a no-brainer. We've had conversations previously, even before I went over and stuff, and I just kind of liked the direction the club was going and the young lads, the opportunity they provided, and I just decided Chelsea was the place for me. And
you two have never had media training?
No.
No. I swear to God, you swear you had. You're brilliant.
Having one every week.
In terms of talent, so when do you start working with kids?
Look, in the club, we started under six. We're rare from that regard.
Do you?
Yeah, on the boys' side, we started, well, we have an open academy for six-year-olds, so you'd have boys and girls, you know. And we're one of the few clubs that are a National League club that have a boys and girls section all the way through. And the girls' side, we started under 12 and we go right to under 19 and then obviously into the women's first team. So, yeah, it's a massive, massive responsibility that we have within that. There's obviously, I suppose, becomes an elite element when it steps into National League and they get slightly older and they go down a different pathway and it becomes a little bit more serious in regards to what they're trying to do and the dreams that they have.
And at such a young age.
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously at 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age, they're not, there's no elite athletes. They're not seen that way. They're kids playing football and we're trying to help them along their development. It's when they get to the National League, I suppose, at under 14s and the boys. That's certainly where it becomes much more serious. And that's where the infrastructure and everything around them needs to multiply and become as good as it can possibly be.
And I read that one of your feelings about the sport at the moment is kids just aren't out on the street playing football like they used to. And that's having a ripple effect right the way through the sport. Can you elaborate on that for me? Because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, like obviously socially, life is very different now for young kids. I think it's easy for a kid if they're surrounded by other kids who want to play computer games, etc., that they get, you know, not dragged into them circles, but that's the circles they surround themselves with. And everything is becoming more organized. So like sport and football, everything is organized practice. There's very much an emphasis gone from unorganized practice where kids used to just go out, play on the streets. And it's something around Europe that's being recognised as well. I was at an ECA meeting, the European Clubs Association meeting in Europe. The scary thing for me is, you know, we sat there and there was guest speakers from Ajax, from Benfica, top academies in the world. They were talking about the problems that they have, that they see street football becoming something that's just not done the way it was. With regards to creativity, what effect does that have on young players? Because they're not creative, they don't have time on their own, they don't get to express themselves individually. So they start to develop player-led training where the players are just coming in, playing futsal, playing beach football, doing whatever they want. And they see that the expression that the players show, they just would never show in a normal training session that's set up by the team and the coach and the club.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
So that's where the game is going. That's what they're recognising around Europe, as well as the infrastructure and quality that they have in their own team structure training has improved, but they're also improving the aspects, and that's the detail. That's the detail that it takes. So I guess for me, it's slightly concerning and worrying that we're kind of falling further behind in both aspects. They've recognised that.
So that would make your participation in the documentary make absolute sense, because what would you like viewers of RTE1 to take from the documentary? What message would you like to get out there from the doc?
Look, the big thing for me is that, like, I watched the All-Ireland final at the weekend and I watched the Clifford brothers, and I was like, I text one of my mates and I was like, it's like watching Messi and Ronaldo. Like, you take this sense of pride from sport and to the Kerry people, they woke up the next morning and they were like,
oh my God,
we've won the All-Ireland. Yeah. Like, it's incredible. And I think sport is sport, and it's not about, you know, football or boxing or just talk about horse racing gets this and the greyhound industry gets that. Sport has an amazing way of bringing people and rising the sense of pride in people. And from an economic perspective, when you talk about these young players have a passion that they want to be footballers, that's not something that's just, you know, a pipe dream. There's players there with the ability to be elite level footballers. Now, at the moment, we don't have the infrastructure to support that in this country. It's as simple as that. We don't. And around Europe, the gap is getting bigger and bigger. If we're to generate that interest, like some of these sitting beside us there in Anifa, they've never seen a team in a World Cup. Do you know what I mean? Yes, we've had the success of the women's team, but the men's team haven't been in the World Cup. What that generates and inspires in a group of young people and in the country is massive. So when you hear about there's no industry in this country, the industry can absolutely be developed. If the infrastructure is invested in and these young players are invested in, God knows what we can achieve.
Yeah.
You know, and I said that in an interview the other day, that we have a mentality to develop 10 Evan Fergusons.
Yeah.
And people will laugh at that and say, well, how are you going to do that? Evan Ferguson's a once off. Well, you just have to look at the Irish team 25 years ago. They were all playing in the Premier League.
Yeah.
They were all Premier League players. They were all superstars.
It's so interesting when you just highlight that. As simple as that.
Like, absolutely.
But you were the driving wheel, Colm, I think. Aoife, to tell me, women's sport has really excelled now. I mean, you probably don't remember a time when it wasn't so profiled. Have you noticed a big change in women's sport?
Yeah, like 100%. Oh, I think even definitely like the publicity side and the media side of it. You know, like you take the women's Euro final the other day, like,
amazing.
So many people talk about it, you know, about the game. It was a great, exciting game, the penalties and all. Like, whereas I think growing up, I wouldn't have even watched women's Euros.
Yeah.
Like, 100% wouldn't have watched women's Euros. And, you know, you've got little boys and little girls, you know, wearing the likes of McCabe and on the back of the jerseys. Same thing. I would have never known any of the women's players growing up. Like, and so I think that it is really great that, you know, people are looking at it and they're saying, oh yeah, like they play for Ireland. It doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman. It's,
yeah, true.
You know, these are great athletes. I want to be them.
And the big talk today was the English team celebrating on TikTok. They had a lot of fun, let's put it that way. Darren, what's the ambition?
For myself?
Yeah.
In general.
I'll put you on the spot there, sorry.
It's no problem. I'd say the way I like to look at things is I like to achieve certain goals before others, I'd say. So obviously currently right now I'm on loan to Athlone Town, which I think is a huge opportunity for myself. So the goal right now is to do well there and gain the experience I need, and then obviously push on from there when I come in for a pre-season and whenever I get the chance.
So really, one step at a time.
Exactly. So I'd like to look at it that way. And then obviously I'd say the end goal is to be playing on the big stage, playing for my country, playing, you know, representing my family name and getting my name out there and doing as best as I can.
Aoife, what's your ambition?
Yeah, I'm 100% the same. Just trying to be the best that I can be. And I think, you know, everyone wants to play for their country. It's the greatest honour you can have. Like, but before that, you know, there's little steps you take. You just take every day, every training session as you come. And once you give it 100%, then there's no doubt that you can.
You've got such smarts. Is that part of the training? Yeah. I'm writing this down.
Like, maybe it's part of the principles that we try to install in
it
them.
It is, isn't it, though? Yeah. It's wonderful. So, and what you're saying, this documentary hopefully will deliver a message that with the right supports, the world is their oyster. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. When you hear them talk about it and how passionate they are, like, there's no doubt in their mind where they want to go. And we were talking about this before, how difficult it is that there's no infrastructure there really to support that. That's the biggest issue. If you talk about how the game has developed around the countries in Europe, well, the infrastructure is already there to support it. So the way the women's game has grown so quickly, and you've got, you know, the development of the Women's Soccer League, etc. in the UK, but the facilities and the infrastructure and the support network is already there. We don't have that in this country.
Yeah.
We need to invest in that, you know, and unfortunately, my fear would be that if we don't, well, then they may never see a men's team play in a World Cup because the gap is getting bigger and bigger. And it might be rarer that we see women's teams play in the World Cup because the gap is going to continue to get bigger if we don't act on that quickly. So either people don't understand it or they don't care enough to do something about it.
Okay, well, Football Families is on RTE1 this Thursday coming, and there's three parts. It's on at 10:10 PM and you are all superstars in it, and I hope that it is the first part of the conversation. You're hoping that will happen. Thank you all for coming in, and like, best of luck. And I don't know if you say break a leg to sports people, but break a leg. Thanks very much. We've live music from Shopsy after the break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.